And it's just like with anything else where influencers do makeup tutorials inspired by current events and trends. Filters are the same thing. And it allows people to participate in a trend with something that's really easy to use, whether it's a game or it's a makeup look or something that they could just put on and anybody could put it on and participate in that trend. That's what makes filters so viral. And it also makes filters such a popular like avenue for apps like TikTok to create trends.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the AI Download. This is the weekly show where we break down the biggest news and stories of the week in AI, plus we give you insights into the future. I'm your host, Shira Lazar. I'm the CEO and founder of What's Trending, and let's just say I've been covering digital culture since the first VidCon in a basement of a hotel. Yeah, that happened. It's now like the Comic-Con of YouTube. Anyway, a huge thank you to our sponsor, Hivelighter. They are your AI-powered reading assistant, bringing you smart, personalized insights so you can spend less time scrolling and more time doing. I'm actually back in California. I've been traveling a lot, and I'm getting over a cold. So if you're wondering what this voice nasal thing is happening, it's a bit of a cold. But I'm on the other side. Thank you very much, and I'm healing. It was bound to happen with all the travel I've been doing, and I have more travel coming up. But I'm so super excited to be back in my little home studio today for the show. And we've got a great guest who I love, a woman who I've known for over a decade, I'm pretty sure. She has since become like the top XR AI and VFX artists. Her social AR designs have captivated audiences, generating over 300 billion views and 1.3 billion shares. Paige Piskin, welcome to the show. Welcome to the AI Download.
Thanks so much for having me, Shira. It's amazing being here with you. And it's so cool to think that like we met over a decade ago. I've always admired your work. So I'm so honored to be here.
I mean, you've really come a long way because we came up in the digital media space together. And then somehow clearly you knew how to do all this stuff, but you've really taken it to the next level. And I'm just so impressed with your work and I'm excited to get into it. Well, before we get into all the amazing stuff that you're doing, let's get into some AI headlines for this week. This one comes from NBC News. Pope Leo XIV says that AI influenced his name choice. So the new Pope chose the name Leo XIV after Pope Leo. And I will say this, I don't know these Roman numerals, XIII, apologies, who guided the church during the Industrial Revolution. So his message is that he's preparing the church for the impact of the AI revolution.
Wow.
Paige, I know you're probably not, up to speed with Pope stuff, but why do you think AI would be so important to him? I mean, I've been fascinated by this as we've been doing the show, actually, that even the previous Pope had this AI summit. I think it was a few weeks ago or last month.
It just seems like he's really embracing technology and they're not trying to deny it. They're not trying to push it away. They're trying to accept it, implement it, and teach people about it rather than have people be afraid of it. It seems like he's doing that early on so that maybe it creates better, I guess, like maybe a little bit more understanding around AI or allows people to think, hey, this is not something to be scared of. This is something to embrace, hopefully.
Yeah, no, totally. And if you think about, I think the Pope, in many ways stands for, global justice, social change, these all things intersect with AI. And also, if you talk about morals and ethics, we're going to have to think about these things when it comes to AI. So him taking a stand and be integrated into that conversation, I do think is really important because at a global level, maybe it will help people that aren't into this realize that it's important. Right? If you're following the Pope, you're like, oh, he's talking about AI. Maybe I need to know about this stuff. Maybe I should keep up. And also maybe we'll push, I don't know how, I think people listen to the Pope or they take it, obviously respect, take it seriously, him seriously. But maybe if he says the government and people and the world needs to be looking at these things in a different way, they're starting to set that foundation that like, if difficult conversations are going to come up, I'm going to say something, you're going to take me seriously. And maybe listen, hopefully it will help, depending on what, you think about the Pope and all that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, because I didn't read anything. Like, I'm definitely not up to date with what's going on with the new Pope. How did he use AI to pick his new name?
I think it was more that it was inspired by a previous Pope that was there during the Industrial Revolution, like a changing of the times.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so that makes sense.
I mean, this was also a clickbaity headline that has now been is everywhere. So, and it kind of makes it like modern. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be your modern day Pope. Yeah. I'm going to be in with tech and the kids. And the thing is like, it's actually interesting because, you know, the whole church actually invests in companies. It's like a profitable business. So smart as well. Just saying. Let's move on to this story from TechCrunch. Trump has fired the copyright office director amid AI training dispute. According to Representative Joe Morrell, quote, Donald Trump's termination of Register of Copyrights Shira Perlmutter is a brazen, unprecedented power grab with no legal basis. The move also just came one day after she reportedly declined to support Elon Musk's attempts to use copyrighted content for AI training. Of course. Sorry. Gotta laugh at this situation, right? So what is your take on this? I mean, is this just timing? Or clearly, maybe is it that he doesn't want, you know, people to challenge someone like Elon or other companies that are doing this? Like, what is going on? What is your take on some of these companies using copyrighted information and I guess where the government should step in?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I definitely think it's a little bit of both. He obviously seems very close with Elon, and he seems to fall back on a lot of what Elon says, and he like leans into that very hard. But also, there's such a big debate around what's going on with copyright with AI. I think they're it seems like the government is leaning more towards more freedom with access to copyrighted materials for training because it's what's already being done. And it probably would be like a huge can of worms that would get opened up if there was like complications because of that. That's just my guess. I don't know, but it seems like they lean that way.
I know you're not like, I know this is just your hot take on it.
Yeah, it's just my hot take.
So I totally get that. But no, but like, I think that what's interesting because you are an AI artist, right? And you're using these tools all the time. How do you think we should be approaching this? Like, again, because a lot of these platforms have already built, does that mean that we say, okay, at this point, like you still get to do whatever you want? Or like, is there a way to create new roadmaps or approaches and models at this point? Because I know new companies popping up are trying to do that because they recognize maybe that what was done wasn't necessarily the best approach.
Yeah. As a creator, I personally feel, I can go two different directions. I do feel that if there's enough human intervention in the work, if whether it's like you're training models on you're creating Loras that are trained on your own art data, which is what I do a lot of, or I'm using myself and I'm doing a lot of creative work in the process, that the more it is something that I've put a lot of time into, it feels more like it's something that I've made, that it feels like it's mine. But if I had the choice to use all ethically sourced, ethical models like new companies that are coming out these days, like Moon Valley's tool or something like that, like if I could have access to tools that are using ethically sourced data, I would lean that way. And so I hope that that's the future of the space, is that all models are using ethically sourced training materials.
Yeah, totally. And my worry is when you're, you know, then approaching folks like this, like, you know, Elon and OpenAI and all these folks, I mean, they're the ones in question. There's others, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to let them just say, like, do whatever they want. Do you think that's an issue? Including with this person now leaving. I mean, if you don't have someone that we trust that's leading copyright as these new models are being built for how we look at AI, that's actually, it's scary and dangerous, right?
Yeah, it seems very tricky and it seems like a slippery slope. I feel like they should be more cautious with things like that and try to set a precedence that it should be these companies are very profitable and they have the ability to make sure that they ethically source their data. I can understand smaller startups figuring things out, experimenting, but when you have like these major companies, they should be using ethically sourced data because they can. They can buy licenses for millions of dollars to libraries of stock footage and buy movie production companies' data if they wanted to. And they could do that the right way. And they could ask artists for permission for their work. So it really should be something that is the norm. And I think that if we're leaning away from that, it's a little scary. And I think that you'll see, even though they might allow it, it might be a thing that's legal. It's not going to be accepted well from the community. I get a lot of pushback when I use AI tools, even if I'm training models on my own artwork. I've trained models on my own drawings, my own 3D models, and I use that stuff a lot. But people still push back. So it's just going to get a lot of pushback on the work that's produced with AI until there's a lot of clarity on ethics.
Yeah, you know what? I get that. And I think that, you know, if we're pushing back on artists and they maybe don't use the platforms that we're using, and so then it becomes like a domino effect. But like the pushback really needs to come to pushing back at these companies and these leaders. Because you go into an artist that's just trying to make it and like survive, right? Like that just, I feel like that's not fair. It's like you're pointing at the wrong person, even though it is, you could say part of the problem. Is it enabling it? You know, all these things, complicit. But like, push back against these folks. I mean, Elon's just saying through this that he was literally like trying to use in copyrighted material. Like someone like you, you're trying to go out of your way to be ethical about it, right? Within the current circumstances. So I feel like we need to not, you know, throw artists or people like, or creators like you under the bus. Like I got thrown under the bus when I, you know, tried the Studio Ghibli thing, which I get. And we've talked about that. As I was realizing what was happening around it, I took it down. But again, I was like, you're pointing your finger at the wrong person.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe if they point it at us and we're dragged, then we just won't continue using these. Have you tried, and I want to ask you this, Paige, have you tried copywriting any of your AI work?
I haven't yet, no.
It'll be interesting to see what happens because I hear, or trademark at least, needs to be human-based, right? So it could be maybe a prompt, but not the result, which is really interesting. So we'll get into this. Maybe I'll do a whole episode on trademark and copyright and AI in the future.
That'd be great. I need to learn that. So definitely do that episode.
Yes. I have really great people actually to talk to about that. So that will be coming up soon. Let's move on to this story from NPR. This was everywhere this past week. A family uses AI to recreate slain victim for courtroom impact statement, possibly a legal first. This was wild. So a sister of a murder victim used artificial intelligence to create a digital version of her brother to deliver his own impact statement in court. And experts believe this may be the first time that AI has been used in the U.S. to recreate a deceased victim for testimony. Let's take a listen.
Hello. Just to be clear for everyone seeing this, I am a version of Chris Pelkey recreated through AI that uses my picture and my voice profile. I was able to be digitally regenerated to share with you today. But here is insight into who I actually was in real life. Take a look.
All right, I'm Chris Pelkey. I served with the United States Army in the infantry. I'm from upstate New York.
I can't tell you how humbled I am for those that spoke up for me, everyone who flew in, took off work, those who are watching this remotely, and for everyone who has supported my family and loved ones through 3.5 years and 2 trials. I wish I could be with you all today.
So, how wild is this? Do you feel like this is ethical to use the likeness of someone? Obviously, they're not around anymore, but this could help. Do you foresee this happening a lot in the future?
Ooh, that's crazy. I'm still wrapping my head around that because I hadn't read that headline yet, and that is insane. I feel like we're definitely going to see more of that, but it does make me question because it isn't them. Even if something is trained on us, I've used tools that, like there's one from Meta AI that allows you to see what it's like having an AI version of yourself run your Instagram account. And it tries to speak like me based off of all the information it's using, like my emails, my messages, my content. But it's not me. It doesn't exactly sound like me and it doesn't answer the way I would answer. It's close, but it's not really me. So I feel like it's a little bit tricky going down that route because we might be able to create something close to a simulated version of somebody, but it's not them.
Yeah, and it goes back to consent. Would they have wanted, like, I think in the future, in your will or whatever, there will be like, do you allow us, your family, to use you or do some sort of recreations? Maybe, I don't know, at this point, if someone's not around, doesn't matter. I think in this case, it is for emotional impact, for a testimony, to really get across what they wanted to, because clearly they weren't able to. And like, I see similar things with VR, right? Like, to understand what a victim, what they went through, like, let's create this scene in VR, right? Like, we're seeing this pop up a lot to get the jury or, you know, or the judge to really feel into what was happening to make a better judgment, right? So I see tech really being integrated into the courtroom, and hopefully in you know, a way that supports victims. And I just think that these types of things will be brought up a lot. And this was an interesting use of it for sure.
It does sound like something that could be extremely useful for victims to be able to be heard or seen, if they may have not even had maybe videos where they got to explain who they are or explain the story, and hearing what happened to them, maybe coming from their mouth or just seeing them in a different way, presented that way, could just help for understanding a little bit more of this, or another side that you normally can't get if somebody's not here anymore.
Imagine if you were like so triggered and testifying would be so difficult, and so you sent your AI instead. I wonder, I feel like that's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Right? And it's going to be like, okay, it's a decision. Like, just saying, this might not help you. No, I can't. I can't go through this again. I'll like record myself. Like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Like with someone who actually is still alive, but like is just does not want to testify.
Yeah.
But they send their AI.
That's wild. What a concept.
Possibly. Okay, moving on. Sorry to bring up Elon Musk again. I'm sorry. From PC Mag. Gross. This is not me. This is the headline. Gross. Elon Musk's Grok AI will undress photos of women on X if you ask. Okay, so this is what went down. In the replies of women's tweets, people are asking the chatbot to, quote, remove her clothes, and it's producing scantily clad AI-generated images of them. ChatGPT and Gemini reject similar prompts. So when someone called it out, even Grok responded with an apology and said, quote, this incident highlights a gap in our safeguards, which failed to block a harmful prompt, violating our ethical standards on consent and privacy. We recognize the need for stronger protections and are actively working to enhance our safety mechanisms, including better prompt filtering and reinforcement learning. We are also reviewing our policies to ensure clearer consent protocols. Wow, you should send this to Elon, because, you know, if only he used Grok to respond to folks. Versus just, you know, getting defensive and not finding a solution. So what do you make of something like this?
I think it's kind of scary that a major company like that would have something that wasn't secure and safe for young people to be looking at potentially. Like I think that major platforms, OpenAI, all the others, Gemini, is really important to be have all fronts covered so that you don't get any issues like that where people could be using it for the wrong things or to do something that could violate somebody's, you know, the rights to how they want their body to be seen. So it's really important. I think that missing that is really bad luck. Especially for a major company again. Like I could see a tiny little company that is just starting out making a mistake. But when you're that big, you really have to have all those protections before it's reaching the public.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw what happened with Meta with those celebrity chatbots, right? How they were having sexual conversations with minors.
Ooh,
like that level of mistake. Like you would think there would be people that would, you know, poke the bear before it went prime time.
Yeah.
To like make sure that those things happen. I mean, I guess I know we're learning out loud, but you know, it's super sketchy.
Yeah. There, I think a lot more of these companies need to do their due diligence before things are released to the public or share them just with beta testers first so that people can just really move through these issues. I'm a beta tester for a lot of companies and I look for issues and I try to like present that. I was a beta tester for one of these kind of companies and I saw that there was like a picture of me that was, I just wanted a picture of me on the beach, but it made me topless. So I had to report it and it was good to be able to report things like that early. Yeah.
All right. Just brought up so many questions. One, that's awesome that you're a beta tester and you're doing this and you're seeing it. How does that work? And how many times do they listen? And what can, you know, companies learn? Like how should they be testing out these things?
I think it's really important to have beta testers and to have it be like you go through phases of beta testing before something goes public. A lot of companies do have this, but sometimes they rush to launch, I think, because they just want to release things to the public and people start demanding it and they want to get in the press and be staying up to date and doing the research and working on new things. But they do often have beta testers and we're supposed to move through issues like that and report them. And so it's I like being a part of groups like that so that if something comes up or if I have an issue, I can report it. But yeah, they usually take action. And the ones that I've reported are things that they've noted and I haven't seen it happen again. So I feel like you know, if you do have programs like that, it helps prevent issues from coming up.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right. Finally, I'm sorry I have like such dark stories today. Maybe you have, you know, of a positive one, but we're going to be getting into in a moment all this cool stuff Paige is doing. But this is important. Okay. All this stuff creates more knowledge. So we're informed. So we can be part of this whole revolution in a good way, right? We need to know all sides, the bad, the ugly, you know. So Mashable. I feel like I preface this as if we're going really dark, but so character AI opens a backdoor to free speech rights for chatbots. So character AI is one of the leading AI companion bot apps that's on the market. And they're fighting for the dismissal of a wrongful death and product liability lawsuit concerning the death of a 14-year-old Sewell Setzer III. This was a huge story where this young boy was using the platform, built this relationship with this AI, and then took his life at 14, okay? So as co-counsel to Sewell's mother, Megan Garcia, and technical advisor on the case, they've been following these motions closely and with concern. In a hearing last week, and this is from the article, Character AI zeroed in on its core argument. This is fascinating. That the text and voice outputs of its chatbots, including those that manipulated and harmed Sewell, constitute protected free speech under the First Amendment. So this means, under this argument, like, does AI have free speech, or is it the platform that has free speech? Are we moving into AI rights? What is your take on this? Like, clearly they're trying to protect themselves because they've been sued because of this.
I think that AI is a really, it's such a new thing. And so everybody's going to be trying to scramble and they have new issues that arise because of it. But I think that it's, these are important conversations to have. And there really needs to be more protections when you're using AI, especially for minors. Like I would never want my child to be using an experimental new AI technology because it seems to me like it would be just so risky. And I think that these things are going to start to get in children's hands much more in this next decade. So it's really important for, I don't know, platforms to be have protections for young people and minors using them because they are so vulnerable.
Exactly. And I think that this is going to set a precedent. If they actually win under this, that it's protected speech under the First Amendment, this opens a whole thing for others that if you end up messaging with a bot that tells you to do something that is not on the platform, right? Because it's free speech.
That's crazy.
That is wild. That's the level that we're dealing with. So again, you know, yeah, like that the platform doesn't need to take responsibility for that.
Yeah.
Because it has its own mind, like AI, it's its own thing, its own personhood.
It's wild.
It's happening, y'all. This is, you know, crazy. And on the other hand, I don't think this maybe will work. And hopefully, you know, this mother will get the justice she deserves, unfortunately. But, you know, this is going to be a big case to follow. And so we'll definitely be continuing to follow that. And maybe I feel like I'm getting ideas for future shows. Maybe I should have the lawyer on and the mom. Actually, yes. Lori, why am I blanking her name? She is an amazing journalist. She broke the story. You should check her out. She covers amazing stories around AI. Oh, she just popped up in my feed. Lori Siegel. Check her out. She's an incredible journalist. She has also a platform, Mostly Human Media. Go check out the YouTube channel and the video where she interviewed this mom about everything that happened. Heartbreaking, but very so important hard. Reporting. Yeah. And those were your AI headlines of the week. Again, Paige Piskin is with us. You really built a specific niche with what you do. Let's get into it. First, with these Instagram Snapchat filters. If you used any of those really intricate filters on social media, on your face that made you look like many different things, Paige probably created one of those, just saying. And brands paid you big money to make those. Where is it at now? Is it done? And how are you bringing AI into this?
Yeah. So I started making AR filters about 5 years ago when it first came out. And like everything, there's ebbs and flows to the industry. So it's changed a lot. Like Instagram's just completely moved away from AR filters, social AR, to work on Orion and other products. Orion is like their new AR glasses that is going to be like a really cutting edge pair of glasses that I imagine is going to come out in the next like 2 years, but they've shifted budgets away from it towards that instead, or at least that's how it sounded when I was reading about it. While Snapchat's gone heavier into AR, and they recently released a pair of beta testable spectacles. They're a pair of glasses that you can wear and see AR filters on. So other companies are going in on it. And so it's different, you know, I guess it depends on how the company's moving forward with it. But Snapchat's moving forward. Effect House for TikTok moving forward. Filters perform really well there. So for me, I see I've been still getting like continuous growth for my AR effects on both those platforms. My Snapchat filters still drive somewhere around 200,000 clicks to my link tree every month. My TikTok filters still get like 3 billion impressions a month. So it's still really popular and it works as a great lead generator for me for either like audience growth, finding people that want to learn more about AR or people that are interested in emerging tech or brands that are interested in getting involved and creating their own effects. I definitely see a little bit less of an interest from brands. Brands are really hyped about AI right now, but they're also cautious about AI. So it's like this kind of funky period where it's not as like, I feel like it's going to get hotter, you know, as it gets more ethical, brands are going to really want to produce AI generated content and incorporate into their businesses. But for now, it's kind of like this middle area where they're very excited about that, about AI, but they're utilizing AR for campaigns still. There's a lot of brands that are creating AR filters to promote products because they still just reach audience in a very authentic and just natural way.
Engaging way. So AR, augmented reality, just FYI. I don't know, maybe some people are listening. They're like, what is AR? And explain what AR is, like the work you're doing. So it's, yeah, anytime you obviously have your phone out and you could have something that you're like, you're putting your phone against maybe the wall and see something pop up or an area around you, right? Like it's like those kind of bringing the IRL and digital to life together. Or obviously in the glasses, you'll be able to see things. Would the filters be looked at as AR too, if you're putting a filter on your face?
Yeah, so it's still considered, like for Snapchat, they call it lenses. But the lenses are still called lenses for spectacles, but they're just different. They're world-facing, so it's not really about ones that we wear. Like the way that when we use a selfie camera, most of it's for filters or lenses that we put on ourselves, hats, makeup, all that kind of stuff, character transformations. But the spectacles, glasses ones are more world effects. They're virtual pets, games, fitness applications, lifestyle trackers, real-time multimodal experiences using AI. It's stuff like that.
I mean, it's incredible. You're like literally her work is just beautiful, and you like go in her feed and you're just mesmerized by everything. But you're so good also, I feel, at creating virality around all of this. So what is the key to that with these tools? Is there a formula, like when you launch something, like what you do to get it shared and to get people knowing about it?
When it comes to filters, and it's a little bit different with AI, but I kind of try to tie it all together. With a filter, I try to create filters or lenses that are wrapped around trends. So even if it's something silly like brain rot or Italian brain rot, I'll try to wrap it into a filter or a video theme just as a way to just like stay up to date on trends. And it's just like with anything else where influencers do makeup tutorials inspired by current events and trends, filters are the same thing. And it allows people to participate in the trend with something that's really easy to use, whether it's a game or it's a makeup look or something that they could just put on and anybody could put it on and participate in that trend. That's what makes filters so viral. And it also makes filters such a popular like avenue for apps like TikTok to create trends. It goes so well with like a sound or something like that. So yeah, I just kind of try to stay on the pulse of like what's happening in pop culture and digital media trends like brain rot.
Yeah, brain rot, which I don't, and I'm in the like what's trending field. It's just, I still somewhat don't understand. Can you explain to me what brain rot is?
It's kind of strange. It's just really bizarre content.
What's your take on it?
It, to me, it's just like really bizarre, silly content. And just they call it brain rot because I guess that's what they feel like. It's like something that would rot your brain because it's so ridiculous. But it's kind of become like a genre of its own. And my feed is full of it, like weird cats dancing or the ballerina cappuccina and all that whole those characters. Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird stuff.
Just saying, I need to inform the people out there just in case. So, yeah. And you said it, with AI, Is it a bit different, like the approach to content or virality of sorts?
Yeah. For me, because I still want to stay in a little bit of a niche where I feel like I'm leaning into beauty and fashion. And I also like to add a little bit of like creepy character transformations. I'm a little bit like niche in the style that I like. So in order to create like more engaging reels, I try to lean a little bit more again into trends, but still stay around my niche. There's a lot of AI content that's very viral. That's kind of like either like funny or cute, or I don't know, like more high level cute or funny, like maybe with cats that are like, have you ever seen those videos of those cats that are like going through like a crazy story? Like a husband leaves his wife and she runs away and gets, you know, has to start a new life. And it's like an entire story of cats. There's all these accounts like that create these little short
story of cats.
Yeah. It's like
AI?
Cartoon cats. Yeah. Those videos.
Okay. Got it.
Really,
so like, okay. Got it.
Yeah. So that content's big, but I'm not really like, I'm trying to lean more into doing what like kind of creating like cliche influencer kind of content, but using AI, like creating fashion videos or creating makeup tutorials using AI as a way to produce the content. So my stuff's a little bit more like that, like a little bit more like, I guess, traditional influencer content, but done with AI as a way to experiment with the tool.
So cool. Yeah. I mean, some of it looks like a music video, like a Gwen Stefani music video.
Yes. Yeah. I've been just experimenting. It's so fun.
How long does it take to do one of those videos, by the way?
Oh man. It really depends. Usually it's like less than a day. Once I have an idea, because these are projects that I'm doing on my own, I just kind of have like a vision. I storyboard it out and then I start building, without having to do any kind of rounds of revisions. It's just like, you could really get it done in anywhere from like 4 hours to maybe like 8 hours. But for me, usually it's like maybe 4 hours. I recently did I entered into the Runway Gen 48 competition, and that one was over 48 hours that you had to participate in this kind of like essential AI hackathon. It's kind of like a tech hackathon, but for creating a film. And so I had no time that weekend. I had only like 4 hours to work on it because I had family events, weddings, and all this stuff happening in one weekend. And so I had no time. I only had 4 hours to work on that competition over a weekend. And so I had to really like consolidate my pipeline. And so I was able to create a short film. Like that was maybe like a minute and a half in about 4 hours. So I would say that that's like my typical time frame to produce stuff now, because entering that competition's taught me how to like really consolidate my pipeline.
Yeah, I saw that little short on your Instagram that you created, very Tim Burton-esque. Yeah. So I guess, what was that like to be part of an AI film competition? How do you decide on the concept and create what you did? Right now, I have so many questions, like if you can remember all these. And right now, does the tool only allow for a certain amount of time, not necessarily like a feature? Because I see a lot of these film competitions for AI just being more shorts.
Yeah, so they allowed us to create a 1 to 5 minute video, and you had 48 hours to produce it. The requirements were to use Runway's Gen 4 or the just Runway platform to create all your videos. And you could use other platforms to create your characters and bring it into there. But they wanted you to use their platform to create all the videos that you use. And they had just released a new tool called Runway References during the competition, just to people who participated. So we were essentially beta testers for this new feature. And it was a groundbreaking tool to be able to use. And it was really the core piece that enabled me to be able to produce what I did in like 4 hours. Because without that, I would have never been able to have the continuity that I had. So we basically only had 48 hours to produce that, to be a part of that competition. And that was really like, it was kind of simple requirements.
Yeah. How is Runway different than the other tools out there right now?
It's really good. I would say that their newest model, Gen 4, is just, it's amazing when it comes to creating people videos, people that are talking or looking around, kind of simple movements. It's amazing for doing stop motion. And that's why I chose a stop motion style for my video, because again, like I only had 4 hours. So I had to like really tighten up my pipeline and also lean into like what works best on that platform. And so like that platform seems to be trained well for some reason on like stop motion style animation and also like 2D animation. And so that meant that every video that I would do would be very like prompt adherent. And so instead of struggling to get people to do what you want them to do. Like, you try to get a character to run sometimes on some of these platforms, it can take like 20 tries just to get them to move in the direction you want them to move. But with stop motion, it really follows the prompt well. So yeah, it's really good with prompt adherence for those kind of styles. Like if you're looking to do animated characters, 2D, 3D, stop motion, stuff like that.
So with something like this, now I'm just fascinating the process around it. Are you coming up with a script or like an idea of it? Or like, how does that work in creating a film using AI with a stop motion? Yeah, can you go through that process a bit so people just understand a bit more?
Yeah, sure. So for this project particularly, I actually collaborated with my mom and my sister on the idea. I struggle the most with picking an idea when it comes to doing a video, like especially for a contest, because there's so many directions you could take. So I just kind of like let them choose the concept. I was like, all right, let's make a character. All right, what's her story? And where is she going? And what is she doing? And so we kind of just bounced ideas back and forth. Like it almost like a little like, forget. It's like felt like a game of telephone almost, but like it was like I started it and then it's like, all right, she's going here. My mom added something, my sister. And then I was like, all right, I have enough to run with. And then from there, I take the idea and I put it into Claude, which is like an AI. You probably use Claude. It's kind of like ChatGPT for text, coding, stuff like that. And it's a much more creative version of ChatGPT to me. Like it's really, really creative and good for scripts. So I went to Claude and I was like, can you take all these ideas that we have and turn it into like a little storyline and try to help me create a storyboard? And so that's usually the first step is taking the idea and having them clean it up and create a screenplay for you. And then from there, you could have it create a shot list.
Wait, so Claude did all that? So you had the idea. You put it in Claude and said, can you create a storyline, then a shot, and then and a shot list as well?
Yeah. So first you start with the screenplay, which basically takes all your ramblings. Like for me, it's just rambling right into it with my voice. And then I just tell it to create a screenplay. And so it takes the screenplay and it breaks it down like scene one, scene two, scene three, scene four. And it describes what's happening and also like writes out the script of what people would be saying or what they'd be doing. And then you could say to it, put this in, create a shot list out of this. And so then it describes each shot and how the shot should look. And that allows you to create your storyboard. And so from there, you could take each shot description and have Claude create a prompt for you that's like leaning into whatever tool you're using to create the images that you're going to generate videos from. So like for me, I was doing all of my images with, I started using ChatGPT like to create all my characters, my scenery and stuff. And then I brought it into Runway, their new tool called References. And by using like taking my, like it's almost like plug and play, like little paper dolls. You're basically taking your characters, taking character one, which is like my child character, the grandma character, the picture of what the inside house looks like, and then telling Runway to make the scene. And then using your Claude prompts, the prompts for each shot, and having that be your prompt. So the prompt explains like little girl sitting on a couch next to grandma. This is what the room looks like. And then you generate the image. And so it's like, those steps are, for me at least, are the most like the most streamlined workflow. And so I feel like I can get my results pretty quickly doing that.
And I guess, what do you say to people who say this isn't real film or art? Because again, the question is, while it might be an original to you, clearly it's pulling from something. And like, even I think this is going to be an interesting issue, where as younger generations are using these tools, they're not seeing that like, that it's inspired by something. So they might get an output. And to people that have maybe the knowledge and the history, they'd be like, that looks exactly like that director, or like, that looks exactly like that movie. And you're like, oh, okay. But like, you didn't know because you were just putting it in. Like, you don't have the context or the background to see that. Like, what is your take on that? Because again, I saw this and I was like, oh my God, this is very Tim Burton-esque. Is that something you put in there? Or is that just like what the output came as?
You know, it actually, like, we were actually leaning more towards the idea of Edward Gorey, which is like an illustrator and writer from when I was very little, and a little bit towards Coraline, but we actually did no prompting.
Oh, yes, I see that.
Yeah, but we did no referencing. Like, there was no use of their name in any of the styles or images or anything, because I wanted to make sure that it was all just clean prompt base. But because the style on ChatGPT for claymation is probably pulling from that, it still pulls a little bit of that aesthetic. But ChatGPT, the prompt I used was just like gothic clay. It was like, make this photo of this girl into gothic clay. And it made this generic kind of like clay style. But it does the same clay style for everything, except this time it made it like a little bit more gothic. But I feel like, I don't know. But yeah, it leans more towards Edward Gorey, but it does still feel like Tim Burton, because we associate really only him and the person who did Coraline with like the only gothic like claymation that exists. At least for me, that's all I associate with that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, totally. And how long are these prompts? Because I feel like we talk about the importance of prompting. Like how detailed, and are they like long, like paragraphs?
It depends on the platform. For ChatGPT, it's so simple. And I use ChatGPT because I was able to get very consistent styles. And like I was saying, like I had such a tiny window. So normally I would use my own models. Like I would use my own drawing model that I have with my own art. So I like to do that because it would also make my work stand out more in a competition to have it look like something that nobody maybe has seen yet because it's my own drawings.
Yeah.
But I wasn't getting the consistent results with it. So I leaned into ChatGPT because they had just released that new generate images in all different styles. And so I was able to generate the first image of this character by just saying gothic clay. And then I was able to create more images like of a graveyard on other platforms like Kreia, or images of like two parents, or images of a grandma, or image of a cat, and then put into ChatGPT and be like, all right, now make her in that style. So it was literally like three letter prompts to just generate more characters in that style. But then from there—
Not consistent usually though, right? Like that, I find the ChatGPT images are so inconsistent.
Well, for this particular use case, all you needed is really just one image of each character, because you're not using ChatGPT to generate each scene anymore, just to generate the characters in the scenes one time. And so that allows you to really just get a consistent style. Then from there, you put it into Runway's references, which allows you to make the scene with everybody in it. And so then you get the consistency, because Runway references, you could put characters, objects, scenery all into your scene, and it keeps everything consistent.
That is wow. Thank you for sharing that, because like I think that we hear about like that and how people do this, we're like, what does that mean? So you basically, to create this, is it 1 minute and 30 piece?
Yeah,
you used Claude for scripting and writing, ChatGPT for images, and also, well, storyboarding was Claude, but like images and character images. And then you put it into Runway for the video, the moving picture, as I like to say.
Yeah, and the references.
And what?
And that new tool, references, was really like the core component, because that's where we built all the scenes for the storyboard.
One-stop shop. Do you think there's ever going to be one program that does this all? Because it just feels like someone like you who gets this could do this. But I mean, this is not necessarily easy for every person.
I don't know. I feel like we will see at some point more platforms that try to do more, like try to do it all. But I think people kind of like tinkering. They like going to different tools, and they like the, or at least me, like I like using different tools and coming together, like and finding, I don't know. I feel like each model is a little bit different, like Kling, Higgsfield, Runway, Luma, they all have a different aesthetic and style. And some of them are good for some, for one thing, but not another. So like, at this point, I personally like jumping around, but I do think at some point there could be one of these companies that just tries to do it all.
Yeah, like for the regular person. I think the person that's deep in the art and is an expert definitely will be using all these things. It's like you have the manual versus automatic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the automatic girl. Like, I just want to be like, this is what I want. One place to do it versus jumping around. That's like my brain cannot manage all the jumps. But I think it's fascinating how you did that. And thank you for breaking it down, because you made it also seem accessible for anyone who wants to try this out. You also, Paige, happen to be, I feel like, one of the few women who's known in this field that's typically dominated by men still, which I feel like that's a very cliche thing to say. Or is it at this point?
No, I think you're right. It does feel very male dominated. I made it into the top 50 for the Runway competition. I didn't make it as a like winner, but I made it into the finals, which was good enough for me. I was happy with that, because it was like something I still rushed and had errors in and stuff. So I was like, I was cool with that. But it was like, I think out of like 3,000 people, they picked the top 50, and I forgot how many, but only a percentage of us were women. The majority were men. They're just great and cool. But still, it is one of these spaces that is very male dominated, at least it seems. I think women just historically are a little bit more skeptical with AI. And I don't know, that's what it seems like. Or maybe they don't think that they have a use for it in certain ways. But I think it's going to start to be something that's going to be more just widely used as it gets more in everything that we use. Like right now, we all have predictive text, so we're all using AI, you know, like it's everywhere. So I think that it's that's going to change. But for now, it does seem like it is very male dominated.
Now, how do we change that? How does the industry change that?
I think that, I don't know. I feel like it's going to happen naturally because a lot of these tools are starting to get AI just in everything. Like Google Gemini is just like they're pushing Gemini out there. OpenAI is making new trends every day. People are like trying ChatGPT every day. That's even using AI. So I think it's just going to become like the norm. But I do think if there's more women that are, you know, speaking about it like you and like just women that are talking to other women and featuring them and highlighting them, it's going to just let other women know that they should try this out. Or maybe like just women sharing the work that they're doing might inspire other women to be like, hey, there's a story I want to tell, or there's a film I've always wanted to make, or I always wanted to start this kind of business. And now maybe I can, because I can now code something on Versal or use something like Cursor, you know, like these tools are so accessible. And so I think that just more women that are talking about it and sharing their work is going to inspire more women to get involved and start creating things they've always wanted to make. And hopefully that's what changes.
Yeah, that is the hope. That is the hope, right? Because I do want, you know, in this tech next chapter, this, I keep saying revolution, which it is, you know, in this time, like I do want to make sure that more people are included that haven't typically been.
Yeah.
We keep saying that, but yet the numbers still remain the same in many ways. So it is up to each of us. And I think that if you're curious, like lean into that curiosity, which is really important. It's why I do what I do. It's like, I'm not at your level. Like there's a spectrum of knowledge of these emerging, you know, tech moments, right? And I think that a lot of times if people don't think they're at your level, they feel like, where's my place in this, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, I always say like, enter at the level you're at and own that.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you start moving up and then finding your place and your voice in it and what your interest is. And you don't need to be doing what everyone else is doing. Do what you're doing. Do what like what feels right for you. So that's what I also like to encourage. I guess, you know, because some of what you say, some people might be listening like, yeah, this is awesome. I know it. But for other people, it might think, oh, this sounds really complicated to use, to get involved with. What should the everyday person using these tools take away from your work and what's possible?
I feel like at any point you can get into these tools. It's very different than the type of tools that we were using in the past to even do AR. And AR was something that somebody could jump into and be making a filter by the end of the week because there's so many resources, there's so many tutorials, but there's a lot of depth to the complexity of the piece you can create. Like with AR, you could create a makeup look day one. But if you want to create a game, there's going to be a lot more steps to that. And I feel like with AI, it's similar where you could create something day one using AI. You could create a website. You could create a media kit, or you could create a concept for an app, or maybe it's a video, or maybe it's like a outline for a book. Like you can do that on day one. And then there's all different levels for how far do you want to take that? You know, if you want to create a film or you want to actually launch that app. So I feel like you could start anywhere and you're not too late. I have some friends that are like scared that they're too late or they feel like there's too much to learn, but it takes like maybe a weekend to catch up on what's the latest that's happening in the space. Cause there's a lot of tools, but there are a lot of like, I don't know, it's all just accessible. I think that's what makes this so exciting is it is accessible. There is a price. Like a lot of these tools are not free. Like you have to pay to generate things. So that's, I feel like, a little bit of a barrier in some ways, but it is still accessible. Like it is something that we don't have to work at a company to access. Like we have access to this stuff. But if I have one hope, it's that this stuff could get more affordable, because I think that that's a big barrier and that's going to be a big separator for people. If you can't just sit there and spend, you know, a couple $100 on a video, like, you know, just for fun, like it's got to get more affordable, I think.
Including when you're using so many tools. That's when it starts adding up, right?
Yeah.
So what is next when it comes to AI and what you're paying attention to? What do we need to know in terms of the future of design, effects, where it's all going?
Ooh, so, there's so many different facets to that. I'm really excited about the video tools that I'm using right now. Like I was saying before, like I have three tools that I love right at this moment. I love Kreia, because you can Laura train really easily. You don't need to use ComfyUI. ComfyUI requires sometimes a pretty heavy-duty computer. You need like a supercomputer to run it, which is, again, a barrier to entry. And you can use Run Comfy, which allows you to access like outsourced computers and stuff. But that's, again, a barrier because it takes time and it's very confusing and it's node-based. But Cray allows you to make your own models in just minutes. So tools like that, I think, again, are breaking barriers, allowing people to create custom work. I love how Runway has references. That's groundbreaking for creating scenes and getting character consistency. And then there's Higgsfield, which is like a really exciting new video tool that allows you to create like really cutting edge VFX style videos. It's what I've been using recently for a lot of my new videos. They have some incredible effects. Like you can make a person look like it has superpowers, you know, stuff like that. And it's just, It's beautiful. You have to check it out.
I feel like if the past year or two, I guess AI had its mainstream moment because of, you know, us just using it day to day as kind of like a coach, a thought partner, writing. And then it's, you know, it had its moment with Studio Ghibli on the images side, and that continues. I feel like the next mainstream moment is going to definitely be more on the video side more consistently, because I still feel like there's a lot of people that don't use it consistently with video because It's just not there at this point, right?
Yeah, I feel like there's so many steps, and like you even pointed out, it's like it's a very like nuanced process at this point, even though it is easy. Like these tools are, they're kind of easy to use, but it's nuanced because it's all spread out and it all comes down to the pipeline that you're following. And if you lack continuity, it throws off your concept, like your video starts to get thrown off. So things need to be continuous in order to hold people's attention. But I do think that once that is like really easy for people to be able to do, the way that ChatGPT made making images easier, like you said, like where you could turn yourself into this style. If you were able to take that a step further and through a platform like ChatGPT generate the videos or generate a whole little mini film, like that would be wild. I can't even imagine.
I'm sure it's coming. They have enough money. Are you using AI in your life at all? I know for work, but what are you using in your actual life?
Oh man, I use AI like literally all day. So it's kind of, I feel like we have to be like similar where like we're tinkering like probably all the time. But I use ChatGPT constantly to talk about, just to learn, like constantly trying to learn new things as I go throughout the day. I use it to help organize my life, to help break down projects or create outlines for projects. It's just allowed me to write better. I'm not a great writer. I'm a visual person. I'm good at like, I'm good with art, like creating art and stuff like that, and 2D art. And when it comes to creating video, I mean, not video, when it comes to creating like text or even talking, like it's just not my strong suit. So having ChatGPT to help just clean up my emails, life changing.
Oh yeah. Girl, oh my God. I saw an Instagram image of someone saying, did my boss just use ChatGPT to write this email? Because it was like someone requested a day off or something. And it was like, oh, yes, of course, take care of yourself. And then it was like, is this good enough? Or do you want to be more professional or casual? So please, some advice, make sure that you delete whatever's at the top when you copy that answer and the bottom. I feel like ChatGPT needs to do that to save us all, because someone will get caught. Because when you do that copy, the text, it includes like, here's your answer. And is this okay? They need to do that for all of us, please. Paige, anything else before we wrap up that you want to talk about, that you're working on, that you want to plug?
Yeah, I'm working on an exciting new project. I can't say too much about it because it's a little NDA right now. But we're working on an app for AR that does tie in some AI tools. So keep a lookout for that. It's going to be probably a few months though before that launches. So if anybody's interested in the type of work that I do or the type of like AR effects I create, just stay in touch on social. And once that app is ready, I will be sharing it. So yeah, I can't say too much about it, but it's coming.
Thank you for that little exclusive. And of course, you could follow Paige Piskin everywhere on social media at Paige Piskin. It is her full name. We'll also include some of the platforms that she mentioned on the show in the show notes and the description, all of those links below. Thank you, Paige, for being here. I so appreciate it. You're great.
Thank you so much, Sierra. You're the best.
Yeah, you're so easy. And I just learned so much from even just talking to you today.
Same for me with you. And like you updated me on all the information for everything that's happening in the world so quickly. And yeah, you're the best.
You're welcome. And I'm sorry, both. And of course, a big thank you to Hivelighter for sponsoring this series. Literally, all of this would not be possible without them. And you've got to check out the AI Download Collection. We basically curated all the top headlines from today's episode and all the previous episodes, so it's easy to read more about these stories or share them with your friends or colleagues. Be the smart person in the room or the virtual room. Click the Hivelighter link in our show notes to get smarter. Thank you so much also to Musso Media for producing and editing this series. Check them out at musomedia.com. If you love this episode, subscribe, rate, and share this. It helps me keep growing the show independently. I would really appreciate that. And we've got so much more coming your way. So see you next time on the AI Download.